I want to thank Ann for saving the sermon this morning. The microphone just popped apart just before I got up here, and Ann found the piece and handed it to me just before I got up here. So, good to be here. Tonight's lesson, if you thought it was going to be about which books we're going to have in our Bibles, I think I announced that wrong last week. That's going to be next week. So that's going to be a series I'm going to be doing every 2 weeks. So come back next week, next Sunday evening, and we'll be studying what books should be in our Bibles. Why do we have the books in our Bibles that we have right now? All right, well, this morning, I want to do a lesson that's just going to be on three verses. And it's going to be those three verses that we read in our scripture reading. There's so much in those three verses that I decided I want to do a lesson just on those. So we're really not going to turn much any other places. We're just going to be looking at those three verses with this incredible example of faith, what faith really looks like. When you think about faith, what makes great faith? What does it look like to have faith in your life? Each of us, as Christians, we want to have faith. We want to grow in our faith. So how would you measure where you are in faith? How do you know if you have a lot of faith or if you just have a little bit of faith? How would you know? And this passage that we're going to look at in Hebrews, I think, really helps us with that. It's in a section of the book of Hebrews that's all about faith. The way chapter 10 ends is by talking about how Christians need faith, and in all of chapter 11 is describing what faith looks like. And the Hebrew writer goes through all these different examples of faith from the Old Testament. So he pulls in all these different people of Abraham and Jacob and then Moses here, and all these different people, and says, this is it. This is what faith is. So I think it's a great passage for just thinking, what's my faith like? How strong is it? Do I actually have real, genuine faith? And so I've titled the lesson, Would You Do What Moses Did? Because it just tells us, hey, here's how faith looked in Moses' life. Here's what he did with that faith. And then the Hebrew writer just hands it to us as, hey, that's what faith is. That's what it looks like. And so we can just think to ourselves, if I would do what Moses did in that situation, then I've got faith like Moses. If I'm not sure that I would have, then I don't have that kind of faith. So it's, again, I think it's a great passage for just analyzing where our faith is and understanding what faith really looks like. So here's the passage. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasure of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. All right, so here's the background. As you know, with Moses' life, Moses was born at a time when the Pharaoh was persecuting the Israelites and was killing all the Israelite babies. And so his parents hid him, and they ended up hiding him in a basket in the river. And then he was discovered by the Egyptian princess. And she takes him and she adopts him. And she raises him in Pharaoh's house. So here's this guy who would have been killed, but instead is treated as royalty. And so the very beginning of the story is incredible. You really see the power of God in that. But then he goes on later. He leaves the palace. He tries to defend some of the Israelites there, and he actually ends up murdering an Egyptian who's hurting an Israelite, and then he becomes an outlaw. He's on the run. He runs off and ends up living in the wilderness for quite a while, shepherding sheep, until finally God calls him and brings him back, and then Moses leads the people out of Egypt. And that's kind of the summary of Moses' life. When you're thinking about faith in Moses' life, there's a lot of different areas you could key in on. You could think about the faith to lead the people across the Red Sea there as the waters parting. You could think about the faith that it took every single day to lead the people as there were all sorts of challenges and everything along the path. I mean, you can think about so many areas of faith. It's interesting that what the Hebrew writer focuses on is this one little moment that gets very little attention in the book of Exodus where it's first recorded. It just says Moses just went out to his people. But the Hebrew writer focuses in on this and says, this is it. This is this great moment of faith for Moses. And what the Hebrew writer seems to be saying is, this great moment is that moment when Moses, after being raised as this Egyptian prince, decides, I'm not going to be the Egyptian prince. I'm going to leave, and I'm going to go join my people in their slavery. This great turning point of the picking the direction for his life. He could have taken this direction of Egyptian royalty, and instead he takes this direction of suffering and joining himself with these slaves. So I want to focus in on this and think what motivated him, what was that faith, what is the Hebrew writer trying to bring out as application for us from that. So the first thing the Hebrew writer does here, just analyzing this text, he opens it up by saying, this is faith. This is what faith looks like. Okay, so what aspects of faith could we see here? Well, the first one, just working through the sentence, he says, it was by faith that Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So after he was grown up, he changed direction. So the first thing I noticed as I was just working through this text and thinking about it is this faith led to a change. That for years, he lived his life one way. He lived his life as this royalty. And then, at one point, it changed. At one point, he refused. He said, that's not me anymore. I'm not going to be that person. From now on, my life's taking this other course. So it was this choice, this decision. And he emphasizes that. He mentions this. He says he's choosing rather to be this. He also says he considered. So he chooses. It's not something that just someone forced on him or anything. No, he thinks through the alternatives. You know, I could live this life, I could live that life, I could do this, I could do that. And I think that what I need to do is to leave all this behind and take my life in a whole new direction. All right, I think right away there's a lot of application to that. The things we do in our lives are basically the course we've always done. It's just kind of a habit of this is the way I've lived here and this is the way I'll live tomorrow and the next day. If I were going to ask you, where do you think you'll be tomorrow at 9 a.m.? I mean, most of us could probably answer that pretty accurately, just because where you'll be tomorrow at 9 a.m. is probably pretty similar to where you were last Monday at 9 a.m. For some of us, it might be a bit different, but for a lot of us, you have enough of a habit and routine to your life, you pretty well know where you're going to be tomorrow at 9 a.m. And that's good. It makes your life more comfortable. It makes it a lot simpler when we kind of have a routine and a habit. What actually makes it a lot harder is when things don't go according to plan, when we change direction, and then the next day you're doing things you've never done before, and when that habit gets disrupted. That's what faith often does, is it changes the course of our life. That my life was going this way, I was doing this and this and this and this, and now I'm going to change, and I'm going to go do this and this and this and this. Becoming a Christian involves this change. If you want to become a Christian and you're intending to, you know, kind of keep doing the things you're doing, that's not faith. I've got to choose that I want to change. At the same time, choosing to grow as a Christian also involves change. If I'm the kind of person where I'm just content with always doing the same thing over and over and over, I'm probably not going to grow a lot as a Christian, because Christian growth involves changes. And it takes faith to make these changes, to say, yes, it's difficult, it's different, it's not like I usually am, but I'm going to choose this other path out of faith. All right, now here's the other aspect that I noticed right off the bat with this, was the next part of the sentence, to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And what I was taking from that is, there's this to be called, he refused to be called this. What I was thinking about it is, he picked a new identity. This change that took place was him choosing that, you know, I was this person, now I'm going to be this other person over here. And of course, that's so relevant for us as Christians as well, that us choosing to follow Christ is not just us choosing to, you know, I'm going to start doing this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to stop doing that. It's that I'm going to be somebody different. And for Moses, the people would see him differently. That he doesn't want people to call him what they used to call him. He wants them to think of him differently. And that really needs to be what it is for us as Christians, that I become a different person to the point that people relate to me differently, see me differently, think of me differently. All right. Well, with those beginning points, now I want to dig into it like this. I want to make a list of what Moses left behind and what Moses gained. And I think this is a great way to think about a decision, any decision that you might make. Well, I could take this path, or I could take this path. Here's the path I was on. Here's the new path. And you can analyze it. Well, is this a better path? Is this a worse path? Which way should I go? All right, so thinking through this, the first thing I see is this honor and recognition that he leaves behind. That really, to think through that, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter anymore. This being called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, that's a lot of honor. That's royalty. You know, remember when Joseph was in Egypt and he was promoted to being second in command in Egypt? Remember what people were told to do? People were told to bow down to him. So that's the level that Egyptian royalty was at. Really, if you study much about Egyptian history, you kind of see that the pharaohs were treated almost like gods there. And so here to have him be a part of Pharaoh's family was a lot of honor and prestige. And Moses chooses to leave all that behind. Leave behind all of that honor and recognition and how people think of him. Now, a lot of our decisions are based on what would people think about me if I did that. I mean, we try to avoid that, but at the same time, how many times when you're making a decision have you thought about, oh, I wonder what people would think if I said that? What would people think of me if I did that? Now, that can be good because it means you're tasting your words and you're thinking, well, you know, that wouldn't come out quite right. That's not the right way to say that. But sometimes it can become more of a self-centered thing of, well, people might not like me if I did that. And, you know, it might change the way people perceive me if I started doing that. And if we're not careful, a lot of times that can keep us from stepping out in faith. Keep us from either following Christ to begin with or growing in Christ. Because the people around me, they might not like it if I did such and such and such and such. Moses chose to give up his reputation. That was faith. All right, another one that I noticed, going back to the text, is this one right here. Choosing rather to be mistreated. So one of the things he chose to accept was mistreatment. So let's put that on the list. He gave up his this honor and recognition and exchanged it for mistreatment, the absolute opposite. How many of us like to be mistreated? Not only do we not like to be mistreated, but we would never choose to be mistreated. It's something we would avoid. And in fact, when we start being mistreated, that's when we back off and say, whoa, something's wrong here. I shouldn't be mistreated. This isn't fair. This isn't how life should go. But yet Moses goes to the opposite extreme. He picks his life knowing it's going to cause him to be mistreated. That he goes into it with his eyes wide open thinking, yes, this is, I know if I take this path, I'll be mistreated because all these other people are mistreated, but I'm going to take that path anyway. Now, you think about how similar that is to the life of a Christian. If I'm a Christian and I'm following Christ, am I going to be mistreated? Well, you think, well, maybe not. Until you think, well, Christ was mistreated, and if I'm following Christ, really following Christ, I mean not just like casually sort of following Christ, but really following Christ, is it likely that I would be mistreated as well? Probably. Whereas a lot of times with Christians, when we are mistreated, when maybe it's just something small, maybe somebody says something to us that's not very nice, not very kind, maybe it's because we're a Christian, or maybe it's just, you know, someone was just unkind. It didn't have anything to do with us being a Christian or not. It was just Sometimes people do that. And we feel so hurt, and we feel like, well, it's not right, and we get so angry about it. And we forget, wait a minute, that's actually what I signed up for. That's what being Christian is. Being Christian is not about life being fair. It's about you're going to be mistreated sometimes. And this is, I think, such a key to relationships. In relationships, oftentimes, we feel really hurt if it's a bit unfair that somebody's a little bit unkind, not realizing that that's the life of a Christian. Of course, people are going to be unkind. Christians learn to accept the fact that there will be this mistreatment and respond in love. All right, well, that leads us to the next point. He says mistreatment with the people of God. Now, this one's interesting. I'm going to put people of God over on this list. Mistreatment, I don't really want that one, but people of God, that actually feels much more appealing. His choice here was not a choice alone. His choice, actually, the way the Hebrew writer paints it, was all about relationships. He was choosing to leave the relationship with his adoptive mother and choosing to gain the relationship with God's people. Choosing to lose the relationship of prestige with all of the Egyptians there and choosing to gain this relationship with these people who are suffering. In a way, it feels like this choice was very much motivated by love, which makes a lot of sense, especially when you read Exodus and you read how it's described there. It sounds like he was concerned about his people, and so he went out and he tried to help them. Our choice to follow Christ cannot be a, this is just me doing my thing to follow Christ. It's got to include, I am choosing to join myself to God's people. This choice of love towards others, that how can I help other people? How can I be a part of this group helping these people? That's how it was for Moses. The two greatest commandments, love God and love your neighbor, they're not meant to be separated. It's not meant to be, well, I do a really good job of loving God, but, you know, I guess maybe next year I can start working on loving my neighbor. The two have to go together, and that's how it was for Moses. This choice to follow God led him to choose to serve God's people. If I cut myself off from God's people, and I want to just serve God with just it's me and God, I'm missing what this choice really looks like, really missing what faith looks like. It's got to be this choice of I'm going to enter into those relationships with God's people. And sometimes we feel like, well, I'm not good at that. That's not my thing. That's hard. Well, yeah, it was hard for Moses. He was mistreated when he did that. So yeah, it does involve a lot of sacrifice. But that's a part of the choice. All right, another thing that I noticed in analyzing this text is he says he was choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. So let's add over on this. Oh yeah, so pleasures of sin, and he mentions it's short-lived. So one of the things we should add over on this side is he chose to leave behind this pleasure of sin. So there was something wrong and sinful about this lifestyle. Now, we don't know what it was, because Exodus doesn't tell us, and the Hebrew writer doesn't tell us. What was it that Moses was doing sinful? What was he engaged in while he was living in the palace? I don't know. I mean, there were all sorts of sinful things that happened in Egypt. There was plenty of idol worship. There was plenty of sin. And apparently, he felt that he was a part of that. Or maybe the sin was simply just he was living a really selfish life. Maybe that was it. I mean, the pharaohs tended to live really selfish lives. Maybe that was what it was. Whatever it was, the Hebrew writer says it was enjoyable. That life was actually pretty nice. If you were looking for a good life, the life in Pharaoh's palace was pretty fun. It was actually, compared to a lot of the other options, that was actually probably one of the best options, one of the best places, best lifestyles you could live in Egypt. And he said, no thanks. And one of the reasons he said no thanks was that little thing right there, fleeting. He looked at the pleasure of sin and he said, yeah, it's really fun and it's really short. That I could enjoy my life here in this palace, but I know it doesn't last very long. And we're going to see that as we get towards the end of these verses, this concept of this choice makes a lot of sense when you realize that how temporary this kind of lifestyle is. It may be fun now, but it doesn't last all that long. All right, well, let's add another one here. He says, there we go. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. Okay. Reproach of Christ. Let's add this one. Reproach of Christ. Let's put this one over here. One of the things he was picking, and this one's really similar to the mistreatment, one of the things he was picking was reproach. And the Hebrew writer says reproach of Christ. Now that's a confusing thing because Moses, what did Moses know about Christ? Christ wasn't born until centuries later. So how could we say that Moses was suffering the reproach of Christ? Well, I think there's a couple of possibilities. One is maybe Moses did know a little bit about Christ. It is interesting. Sometimes as you dig in, you find out that those people back there did understand there were some prophecies of Christ. So maybe. Or maybe the Hebrew writer is saying it that way to help us draw the application, to help us see that just as they were serving God back in the Old Testament, it's really the same the way that we serve Christ today as far as we're living out that same kind of life. So maybe he's saying reproach of Christ to try to help us draw the application and say, yeah, this is Moses is living out the Christian life. This is what the Christian life looks like. Whichever it is, this concept of reproach of Christ, when you become a Christian and you're studying it and you're thinking about, you know, should I follow Christ or shouldn't I? Usually the things we focus on with following Christ is the salvation of Christ, the forgiveness that Christ gives us. Do we also focus on, if I become a Christian, I'm accepting the reproach of Christ? What does that mean? It really goes along with this mistreatment. That if Christ was mistreated, if Christ was persecuted, if Christ went through suffering, his followers will too. There will be challenges. It will be difficult. And if we can see that from the beginning, to see that this is the choice we make when we follow Christ, then I think it changes the way we follow him. That then when there are challenges later on, we don't think, whoa, this is not good. This is not the way life should be. Instead, we realize, yeah, that's the choice I made. I picked the reproach of Christ. That's the life I'm choosing to live. And I think so many times as Christians, it's very easy to shy away from anything that involves suffering and real genuine sacrifice. If something's really hard, if you're like, don't sign me up for that one. I can't do that one. That one's really hard. And I do the things that don't involve a lot of sacrifice. Whereas here's Moses walking by faith, and he's saying, well, I could live a life of pleasure, but instead I'm going to choose to live a life of sacrifice. That's faith. Here we're really starting to see how this passage defines for us what faith actually looks like. All right, well, let's see. I've got reproach of Christ. Then he says, which is greater wealth than the treasure of Egypt. Okay, so let's add treasure over to this side, the treasure of Egypt. How much treasure was there in Egypt? I mean, just look at the pictures of what they found in the pyramids. Treasure of Egypt. It was a lot of treasure. And for Moses to be raised in the palace, probably had just unimaginable wealth. And he chooses to leave it all behind. Now, here's a thing to puzzle over. Do you think it would have been wrong for Moses to stay in the palace with the treasure? It's hard. I mean, we talk about how it's not wrong to have money. It's not. Money's not sinful in and of itself. But in Moses' situation, would it have been wrong for him to stay in the palace holding on to the treasure? I think once we see this, and once we read through Exodus and see how it plays out, I would say yes. If there were people out there who were suffering like they were, for Moses just to sit in his palace and enjoy all his treasure, yeah, that sounds wrong. In fact, when you connect it to a lot of the things that Jesus talked about, you see how similar that is to some of Jesus' teaching. It really comes out even more. You think about Jesus' parable about the rich man and Lazarus, this rich man who has all this money, and this poor man who's laid at his gate, who's just absolutely destitute, and the rich man just keeps enjoying his money, ignores this guy, and it's wrong, because then the story ends with one of them being going to torment in hell and one of them going to paradise. Or you think about Jesus' statement about, when he talks about on Judgment Day, telling those people, you know, you saw me, and I was weak, or I was in prison, or I was naked, and you didn't help me. You didn't see my need, and you didn't help me. And he judges the people for that. He sends them into hell for that. Wow. Jesus seemed to see it as, if there's that opportunity, and you failed to seize that opportunity, then you're responsible for that. And Moses seemed to see it that way. He saw, this is an opportunity. There's the people of God who are being mistreated. For me to sit here with my treasure while they're being mistreated, I can't do that. And by faith, he takes a different path. Lowering your lifestyle is really hard. It's easy when you start to get more money, that you start making more money in your job. It's easy to raise your style of living. It's really hard to bring it down a notch and say, well, I'm not going to live like I'm making this much. I'm going to start living like I'm making this much. It's really hard to do. And yet that's exactly what Moses does. In fact, to say that he lowers his lifestyle is really an understatement. I mean, he goes from the very top, having anything he could possibly imagine, to saying, I think I'll pick the life of a slave. He says, this money is of no value to me. This is not what's important. This relationship with God's people, this reproach with Christ, that's what's important. More important than any amount of dollars in my bank account. All right, well, let's connect this to the last one here. Rather than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. And this one's key to all of this. If you just line these two up, and you compared them, you thought, well, which one's the better choice? In one sense, this is by far the better choice. I mean, from the sense of just thinking about it from terms of his life, of course I want this one. Of course I want pleasure and treasure and honor and recognition. Of course I want that. Of course I don't want to be mistreated or to have reproach or all of that. Of course not. Why? Why pick this one? And the Hebrew writer says, well, a big part of it was, we put the reward over on this side. It really goes back to where he says, you know, the pleasure of sin, fleeting pleasure of sin. That it was, yes, it was fun for a little bit. But then he looks at this and he says, and there's a reward for this. Now, in this chapter, the way we've got these verses isolated, it's not clear, what's the reward? What reward does he get? But if you read through all of Hebrews 11, what you see is over and over again, the Hebrew writer keeps bringing up these Old Testament characters, but then showing that their life points you beyond this life. That the reason they made these decisions was not just because of this life right here. They must have believed that there was something after this life, that there was some kind of reward later. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made this decision. I think that's what's going on with Moses here. The real reason, according to the Hebrew writer, the real reason he makes this decision was, he looks to eternity. And he thinks, you know, I could live this life here in this palace. I could go the rest of my life year after year enjoying all of this. And yeah, it'd be pretty nice. And then I die. And all I had was some pleasure of sin and some people who looked up to me and a lot of treasure to look at every day. And that's it. And then Moses looks at this. And it's like Jesus said, do not store up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and thieves break in. It's all this stuff that, yeah, it's nice for a little tiny bit. Store up for yourselves treasure in heaven. He says, look to something eternal, something that lasts. That's where the faith really comes in. That he looks beyond this life and he sees that there's something that matters so much more than anything in this life, and therefore, I'm going to live for that instead of for this. Now, to wrap this up, Here's the challenge for us as Christians. I think a lot of times, and especially because we live in such a culturally Christian kind of area of the country, I think a lot of times the way Christianity is perceived and lived out is something more like this, that it's more, I have some honor and some pleasure and I enjoy life and a lot of money and I get the reward at the end. And you think, well, I mean, because money's not wrong and having fun's not wrong, at least if we take off the whole sinful part of it, and it's nice to have people looking up to you and all of that. Here's the problem with this life. How much faith does that life actually take? Let's say, well, it does take faith. I mean, you're believing in a reward. I mean, it's really easy to believe that, yeah, you know, I can enjoy this life, and then next life, I'll enjoy that one too. I mean, that just doesn't take a lot of faith. That just, a little bit, but if you're wrong, let's say you believed in a reward, and you were wrong, and it didn't happen. Well, your life wasn't really any different than if you hadn't believed in that reward, so really it didn't make a lot of difference one way or the other. True faith is when I believe in it so much that I make this kind of a choice. That I say, I'm going to leave the life that pleases me, and I'm going to go to the life that pleases God and serves those around me. It's going to be hard. It's going to involve suffering. It's going to involve sacrifice. It's going to involve me making decisions that are not convenient, that are hard sometimes, that are really difficult, that just are challenging for me and just difficult. And yet, I'm going to do it because I look to eternity. Because I have the faith that says, I'm all in on this. The faith that says, it's eternally worth it. I don't see it now, but I see it by faith. And I know that this choice is worth far more than all of the treasure I could have on this earth, all of the pleasure, all the reputation I might have here. I'm going to give it all up so I can have that reward to come. I want to end with the question we started with. Would you do what Moses did? Would I do what Moses did? If I were there in that palace and I lived there year after year and that was comfortable and that was normal and I was used to that, would I one day say, I can't be doing this anymore? This life's too much about me. This life isn't enough about God. This life isn't about those around me. And to make that choice and to say, I'm going to change. I'm going to be somebody different. I'm going to be someone who sacrifices everything for Christ. The way I'd know if I would have done that if I were Moses is if I'm doing that right now. Maybe it's by following Christ if you haven't started that journey, or maybe it's taking a step of growth where I've kind of been at the same plane of serving Christ for a long time, but I need to step out in faith and say, it's time to sacrifice. It's time to give up me and start really sacrificing for Christ. That, I think according to this passage, that's what faith looks like. Let's live by faith. Let's learn to sacrifice and to enjoy that eternal reward with Christ in it. If you're subject to that invitation, then we want to invite you to come forward, give your life to Christ, to begin living for Him while together we stand and sing.